Evening all, this is a Northeast Sitting Forecast. My name is Miles and with me, as ever, is my good friend Rob. Hello Rob.
Hello.
And also with us tonight is a very special guest, but more on that later. First of all, I wanted to give you a bit of detail on why we don't have a podcast out from the Box Social event we had last week. We had a great night. It was fantastic to see a lot of you there and meet you. And we had a great chat with both breweries. But unfortunately, the event was so popular that you couldn't hear a thing on our recording. So unfortunately, we won't be able to put that out. We'll try and get it transcribed and put it out as a blog post in future. But it was a great night anyway, so thank you all very much for coming. But I did say that we've got a very special guest with us tonight. This is a man who will be joining us. I'd like to make it a fairly regular thing. This is our very own Dr. Hop. Hello, Dr. Hop.
Hello, Michael.
Now, what Dr. Hop doesn't know is that one of the reasons I want to get him along here, we have a very special jingle for him. And I would just like to play his jingle for him now.
I just don't know.
Wow. I hope you picked up the hop there.
Not everyone gets their own jingle, you know.
You know you've made it when you've got yourself a jingle.
No, but Dr. Hop is a good friend of ours, Chris, and he is from a scientific background as well as a brewing background. And the idea of the Dr. Hop segment is that we talk a little bit about brewing and brewing science, so we try and get to the scientific explanation of what's going on in brewing. So I would also encourage you, if anyone has any questions in that area, drop us a line, send them in. We'll put them to Dr. Hop. So anyway, shall we get into some beers, lads?
Yep, good plan.
Today we're going to be reviewing Mosaic IPA by Almasty, 6% ABV. I should mention that Almasty is a brewery based in Newcastle.
Yeah.
And this beer in front of us, Miles, was canned on the 28th of April 2017. And not to give anything away, that was only, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
So it's nice and fresh.
This was Almasty's entry into... They have the local Camera Beer Festival. They have a Battle of the Beers every year, and all the local breweries will submit a beer for whatever the category is for the year. Each year it's a different sort of category of beer. This year it was IPAs of any colour, any variety, but had to be IPAs. And this was Almasty's entry. It won the silver prize.
Did it?
Question marks over whether it should have won the gold prize, but yeah. So.
Well, I've seen on Twitter there's a lot of fuss about this particular beer. I've seen a lot of people saying it's beer of the year and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what you think of that.
Well, we don't know until we've tried it, do we? That's the thing. But this was canned. I believe the canning machine was at the brewery the day after the beer festival.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, so it's, you know, that's how fresh it is. It's
got a question, Miles.
Yeah.
Who won?
Who won?
Yeah, who got
was, number one? It was Mordew with their IPA, which I can't quite remember what its name was. But Mordew have won it every year for the last 5 years.
Is it really?
Yeah. No matter what the style, they seem to win. So.
Alright. Fair enough. Right, shall we crack them up?
Yeah. First of all,
yeah.
What do you think of the can?
I like it. I think we've spoken about this before. The first of all, the logo. I like the logo. It's nice and simple. Is that a leaf?
The three trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the three trees are really cool. They look really good on the Imperial Stout bottles.
Yeah.
They're really subtle, but distinctive. I think they're really cool.
I remember you once told me what Almasty means.
Yeah.
And you'll have to remind me. It was something to do with the great outdoors, was it? Or?
Well, it is, but it actually relates to it's a Russian Bigfoot.
Oh, is it really? Okay. Yeah.
So with this ale exploration, as the label says, it is exploring the great wide world of brewing, isn't it?
Yeah. So are they leaves? They look a little bit like dart, like a flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it probably is more of a natural leaf.
Yeah,
but I think it's a stunning colour.
Yeah, it is.
It's really classy looking card
for
me.
Yeah, and is it the same? Because they've got the APA, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
And this is red, and that one's blue.
Yeah,
but is the design the same? I can't remember.
No, the APA is more of a sort of a two tone. So you've got blue on the bottom and silver on the top.
Right. Okay.
In the same way that. The IPA was orange and silver on the top.
Have they got? They've got. It's patterned though. I think similarly, isn't it? You know, it's sort of that repeat pattern throughout.
I'm not sure it is. I think it might just be playing with that same mosaic. But anyway, my throat's really dry.
Come on. Mine's already open.
I've gone for non-branded glassware as well. I hope you appreciate this.
Why have you done that? You don't want me to be influenced if it's Almasty.
Well. I actually think these glasses are a bit of a talking point. These are Spieglau, if that's how you pronounce
Spieglau,
it.
Spieglau, is that?
This is their, this is their IPA glass.
Spieglau.
Specifically designed to house IPAs, but pretty nosy. Oh, it's wonderful.
What is it? What is that then, Miles? Is that? It smells strong. Is that just hops I'm getting there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
It's. As we say, these are fresh hops. Now, one of the things that Mark said to me about... Mark is the owner and head brewer at Almasty. One of the things he said to me about the APA that he'd canned was that when he had a can, it tasted as close to how it originally tasted when it came out the FV in his taste buds.
Yeah.
It was closer than any other beer he'd produced.
Really?
So he's got a lot of faith in the canning line that he uses and the vessel for dishing up his beer. So it's all about that mosaic hop.
Is that what it is? That's what mosaic is then? It's a hop type?
Yes, yes. Mosaic is a hop which was developed from... it was certainly developed from Simcoe, which is another type of hop.
Yeah, I've seen.
I can't quite remember which was the other one it was. But it's a derivative hop. So it's a subtle variation of what those two hop flavours were bringing to it. Some people find it very savoury.
There's something about that it's got a smell that I'm not used to, and the flavours
are
something very different to me. Is it like a single hop type thing then? Have they got other hops in there? Or? Mm-hmm.
That's lovely. It's not your juicy fruit.
It's that piney, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, which accords with the pie. Maybe that again, you know, it's connotations.
It's the power of suggestion.
Yeah, no, I'm a
Darren Brown mind tricks
working on me.
But do you get that as a sweet beer or a?
No, on that sip there. I was just trying to get to see whether it's got that sweetness underneath. I can't get that really.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just the hops are so strong in there.
Yeah.
So maybe it's the fact that it is that. I mean, you tell me if I'm right or wrong. A lot of the time you'll have like blends of hops in a beer.
Yeah.
And so I've tried a single hopped beer before by Wylam Brewery. I think it's, I can't remember the name of it.
Well, Wylam have a few core beers which are single hops, like the I suspect the one are you talking about the Galatia, which is the
I've tried that, but that's not the one I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of is it Sirachi or something like that? Isn't that single?
Nomi Sirachi, yes. is their single hop?
Yes,
PLEL,
And to me, that had it's a flavour where it's almost, I don't know, I'm not sure if I'm really honest what I think of this at the minute, because I think perhaps I like the contrasting hop flavours, and so this is just such a pure one flavour hop that I don't know.
If that particular hop isn't to your liking, then you're not going to like a beer. I struggle with Sirachi personally because I don't necessarily get as much in the flavour, but in the nose. All I can get is coconut, and I can't get past that coconut. And I'm not a particular fan of coconut in a beer. But
do you find sweetness in this then? Can you detect that?
There's a bit of sweetness to it, but I find it you got a savoury edge to it. But it's so clean and
it is
crisp. And
but I think that's what I think that's what I'm spotting. It's like it just doesn't feel like there's any background to it, maybe, or, you know.
Yeah.
I find it's very difficult to describe.
Well, I think sometimes when you have this is intentionally a powerfully hopped IPA to push forward that mosaic hop flavour, and it's everything else is muted back to amplify that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really, really sharp, really rasping, really, yeah, I think it's lovely. But look, what's quite interesting, look at the difference in clarity between our two beers. There's a real subtle change there, isn't it?
Well, it's because they know I like mine murkier than...
But it's that's down to the fact that it's not like excessively filtered and fine. It you know.
But it is, you know, sort of compared to a lot of IPAs I've seen lately. Mm-hmm. Both of them, really, yours in particular, are quite clear. Really, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're not like. I don't know. Most IPAs I've been seeing lately have been a lot murkier than that.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, there's a train of thought. When I said that this beer won the silver prize at the beer festival, there's a train of thought that one of the areas it suffered on was clarity because of the way they judge things at these festivals. But, I mean, to my mind, that wouldn't put me off in any way, shape or form, you know.
Do you know, I like this, but I like it in a strange way because it's something that, while I'm drinking it, I feel a bit confused by it because I'm not sure whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
But it's something that I know I will want again. So does that tell me that I like it? Or, do you know what I mean? It's a bit enigmatic in a way.
This is what I think hops do to you. They push your boundaries a bit further, and you'll find yourself wanting that push.
Yeah. No, this, I can imagine. It's... it's something, well, fortunately, I've got a couple more of these at home. I'm glad I have, you know, because I think, although it's, like I say, it's a flavour I can't get my head around. And even the smell, you know, do you know, it's an intense scent.
You know, we've got a lot, we're in an age where currently we have an awful lot of beers designed to be very palatable.
Mm.
A lot of double IPAs now. Reduced levels of bitterness, it's all about that fruitiness of flavours. They're designed to be gulpable and smashable, and you know, all the apples.
Mm.
And this isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is to my mind is reminiscent of what people were aiming at.
Yeah.
When I was drinking 3 or 4 years ago, you know, it's this is so true to that style. And Mark's IPA's been around for 3 years, and he's regularly brought out IPAs and. They've always got that big, sharp bitterness, that rasp, but really drinkable.
I was going to mention something, actually, about Almasty, but it was also Cloudwater and Wylam to me. Those three, because you and I went for the Almasty, remember it was maybe a year ago, we went to the brewery? Is that where...
Organon Industrial State. That was their birthday. Their birthday.
Yeah, it's good. And I thought all the beers were fantastic. But there's a flavour that I get with Almasty beers that I associate with Almasty beers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like you have the APA, and I'm trying the IPA, and I can taste something that's the same in both of them.
Yeah.
And that happens to me with Cloudwater. And, you know, like I can have, with Cloudwater, you can have the really, you know, strong IPA, you know, the version whatever's.
Yeah.
And you can have, they've got like the equivalent of the table beer, you know, so, you know, 3 or 4%, which I've had. And although there's a massive difference in terms of strength, there's something there that underlies it. I feel like I can tell that's Cloudwater. I can tell this is Almasty. Uh-huh. And with Wylam, I can tell with the variety there that I can tell it's... But then I was thinking, well, what is that? Is it the hops that I'm tasting? Is it the malt? Is it the yeast? I don't know. Is it perhaps a mix of all of those things? But
it's probably mainly yeast.
Mm.
Imagine if two breweries use the same yeast.
Yeah.
One will cultivate that yeast from a starting point and... They'll cultivate it over many, 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 many years, and every time they use it, it'll adjust itself slightly, so that say 10 years down the line, it'll be producing very sort of a real variation to what it was originally.
Yeah.
Now, if two breweries go from the same starting point, they will go, those subtle changes will take them in different directions.
Right.
So they will end up having effectively a trademark edge to their beers.
You presume, am I, is that daft me saying that, or is that something that you recognise?
It may just be a result of whatever their brewing technique is. It can be that straightforward, because there'll be loads of subtle little changes in the way brews are produced, which are distinctive to individuals.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
it's quite an interesting area, really. That Mosaic IPA there is very different to the IPAs he's produced.
Yes.
In the past, you know, all the other IPAs he's produced. But it's still very much an Almasty IPA, isn't it?
There's something there. This is really, to me, like I say, it's very different. Just as an IPA, I've not had anything that tastes like that before. But there is something in there that I can link to Almasty. I can taste something. I'm finding it a slow... I think I drink quicker than you normally.
Yeah.
I'm drinking this more slowly. I'm finding it...
My glass is going down quickly.
It is. But yeah, I can taste... Almasty in that.
For me, I hold Almasty up as having a real good quality. Everything they do has a reassured level of quality about it. I've never had a beer that I thought, ooh, that's not right.
Yeah.
You know, when they put beers forward, whatever the description is of those beers, I know that when I taste it, that's what I'm going to get. They did a Snickers...
Did they?
Or was it a marathon, avoiding trademarks?
Yeah.
And that was exactly that. There was a caramel to it. There was a nuttiness to it. You know, there was a lovely texture, and you know that sort of those flavors sound nice. I'll try that beer, and I will get those flavors.
Yeah.
There's a real quality to that, and a real class, and it's real sort of skilled brewing.
That's something that I was thinking of the other day. It was a mango and guava IPA, and it was really nice. The beer was lovely, but I just thought, is this, like, have I got a crap palate here or what? Because I couldn't taste mango, I couldn't taste guava, I could taste a nice IPA, and there was a sweetness to it, but
yeah.
Is that, do you find that you'll have a beer that contains this, that, or the other, and you're not detecting that? Do you find that that's very easy to... Does that just depend on the...
Oh, it depends on the beer. On the beer, of course. A well-brewed beer. It's not necessarily just well-brewed or not. It depends how pronounced the brewers want those flavours to be.
Yeah.
Simply calling putting fruit in a name of beer doesn't necessarily mean that you want that beer to taste simply of those fruits.
No.
Perhaps you want those fruits to complement the other flavours in the beers. For example, hops, we've said before, yeah. Hops and fruit do kind of go together, so people will use some fruits to draw out the juiciness of hops. Yeah, I don't necessarily think it needs to be clean and clear what it is that they're trying to get across in
yeah.
But yeah, if a brewery set out to produce a particular beer and it hasn't worked...
But it might have worked. This is the thing. I think that it probably has worked for the people with a sophisticated palate who will go, I can taste the beer, but I can also taste this undercurrent of guava.
Do you think having a more sophisticated palate would make you enjoy that beer more?
I think... I would like to taste it. And that's, I suppose, you know, if you're told that you can, that one can, somebody can, I want to be one of those people who can. So I think there's...
It's like, don't press that red button.
But, I want to press that red button. Do you know what I mean? It's I like the beer, so I had no complaints. You know, there's no problem at all with it. But I did think, I can't really taste those things. And I would like at least, you know, I Googled how to taste beer.
Yeah.
Have you Googled that before?
No.
So there are
yeah.
5 or 6 steps. I've not got them written down. But, you know, you're supposed to breathe in a particular way. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to let it sit there in the mouth for a little while. Inhale whilst in mouth. I was trying all these things. No guava for me.
But that actually, you know, I mean, this is something I want to come up in a later show. But when you're tasting something, all you're doing is drawing on memory.
Right.
So when you get a flavour, what's that flavour? And your mind's tracking back to something you've had in the past which tasted similar.
Trying to tell me I've never eaten a guava before?
No, but this is what I mean. It, like, I'll be honest with you. If, I was like, oh yeah, definitely guava. You know, I have no idea what a guava tastes like.
I know what mangoes taste of. Unfortunately, mangoes are never...
So were you thinking if I discount the mango for left must be guava?
Yeah.
I think that probably highlights, there's probably a bit of pretentiousness around some people, like, oh yeah, yeah, the mango is there, but, you know, oh, that guava. Oh. Yeah. Even if they don't taste
that guava's
taste
off. They've not used a very ripe guava.
There will be people out there who don't even taste it, but say, oh yes, that's guava.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Miles, I couldn't taste any of it, but...
So what do you think of the glass?
It's good, although my concern with it is where I hold it. The glass I've got at home is kind of like a wine glass. So, you know, you kind of hold stem. It by the stem, and so I'm not going to warm the beer because I don't want this warming. That's my concern with it.
You can't simply put it on the table.
Well, I can hold it. Yeah, true. But that would be my...
This was developed by... Was it Riedel, the manufacturer?
Yeah, I know Riedel.
In connection with Dogfish Head Brewing in America,
yeah,
Chicago. And the idea is that you have a large bulbous area that allows the aroma to expand from the top of the beer, and then the ribbed bit at the bottom that Rich from Magic Rock describes as being like a dildo.
Yeah, see that.
The idea of that is to agitate the beer as you.
Oh, is it?
As you sort of take a sip, it's agitating the beer at the bottom of the glass, which is meant to reinvigorate the head and throw up more aroma from that.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
That's the theory, anyway.
Do you find that the different glasses affect the beers? And...
I'm not sure, because I very rarely have the same beer in a different glass.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I tend to... Well, this is my standard...
Is it? So you...
If I'm having a hobby beer, I'll have it in these glasses. Because I like them, they're nice and thin.
Where'd you get these from?
These were a birthday present, actually. Were
they? I need to get some.
Yeah, from my good wife got me these.
Oh, very nice.
But yeah, I do like speaking of this.
The reason I ask is, so if I got that IPA, that Mosaic IPA now, and I said, do you know what, I'm going to get you another one, mate. And I come in with just a mug, like you'd have a cup of tea in.
Yeah.
It would bother me, you know. Bother you?
Yeah, of course it would.
But what is it?
What was I having a cup of tea?
But what is it? What's making that happen? Why, the beer's the same.
Yeah, totally. It just wouldn't feel right.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. The beer itself shouldn't be different.
But a glass like this really would just add to the theatre of having the drink.
Yes.
You know, so...
Yes.
I get that because I've got a special glass that I'll use for my beer. And if I think I've mentioned them before, what did you call it? The tulip, did you call it tulip glass?
Yeah.
You know, that not quite what I'm after, you know.
I like the thinner glasses, you know.
I think that's a sign, though. I think a sign of a good glass. I think if you buy top-end wine glasses, don't be putting those in the dishwasher because they'll...
Oh, no. This is the other ridiculous thing with me and my glass collection. It's ridiculous. Which takes up half of our kitchen, basically. I have a bottle brush that was originally designed for washing out babies' bottles.
Right.
But I have one for washing all my beer glasses.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I wash them in a particular manner. You know, I get the water running as hot as possible. Mm. Put a little bit of washing up liquid in each glass. Mm. I rinse it.
You got to give it a good rinse.
And then rinse it again, then rinse it, and then rinse it, and then rinse it.
Yeah.
I do that with each and every glass, every time I have a beer.
So they don't make their way to the dishwasher at all?
No. Not allowed anywhere near the dishwasher.
I mean, I say this, I had... two of those glasses. Last time you and I had the Unhuman Cannonball.
Yeah.
They were in those lovely glasses.
Yeah.
Next time you come round.
Oh.
Bully for you, Miles.
Oh.
In the dishwasher.
When's the funeral?
It's gone.
Oh.
picked up the rubbish.
So who put it in the dishwasher?
Me. All my undoing. I was disappointed, of course, but I have been doing that. And the other issue with doing that is I've got the tulip glasses that have got Almasty on them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that Almasty's fading. You know, the sign, because of the
dishwasher.
Heat of the... I assume it's the heat.
Or, oh.
Anyway.
Yes. No. Craft glasses do not go in the dishwasher.
Lesson learned.
You need to spend hours washing them after.
I'm going to have to catch you up here, Mars. You're well ahead of me. I can see what you mean, though. As I'm drinking that, certainly towards the end there, it kind of falls into the bottom part of the glass. So you actually have a head on it, even though it's like about an inch.
Uh-huh. But it's, like I say, it's designed to reinvigorate it, you know, just to shake it up a bit.
Yeah.
Which I can kind of see. It does make a bit of sense.
It's kind of like a waterfall.
Yeah.
Mm. No, I really like it.
Well, that beer, I set the mark. That's exactly where I want IPAs to be, personally.
Yeah, it's nice.
Delicious.
It got sweeter the longer it went.
That's it.
You find that?
Yeah, but that's you acclimatising to what the hops...
I assume, yeah.
Hops bring. Lovely.
Very nice. I just don't know.
So then, this is our first ever Dr. Hop segment. The idea of this is that we pose scientific questions to our resident doctor, Chris, and he comes up with some sort of explanation for us. So I think we want you guys to be sending us questions in, but in the meantime, we posed a question of our own. Rob, do you have our question?
Certainly do. Dr. Hop, just what is it that goes on in the mash tun?
Well, Rob, that's a good question. Obviously, the mash step's really important in terms of the brewing process. So the main purpose of that step is to get the sugars that the yeast is going to turn into the ethanol that we need in our beer. So the mash step is breaking down the starch molecules that are in the grain into those fermentable sugars. So that's the single-chain sugar, the glucose molecule. The two-chain sugar, which is the maltose, and the three-chain sugar, which is the maltotriose. And they're the three things that, they're the primarily the three things that are in the wort, what we call the wort.
Three-chain, I'm lost on the changes.
Oh, okay.
Can I explain?
So starch is like a big, complicated sugar molecule. It's like a big, long chain of carbons, hydrogens, and oxygen. And the enzymes that naturally occurring in the malt, which the maltster gets us to a state where we can access those enzymes from the grain.
Right.
That's another discussion for another 15, 20 minutes on its own, but that's all to do with modification of malts and things like that, which there's some really good links that we're going to provide, I think, as part of the footnotes.
We'll put them in the show notes.
So you can have a little read about that, or we might revisit in another question.
Right.
But essentially, you've got this long, complicated, branched molecule of sugars, which is the food source for the grain to grow into a barley plant.
Right.
And the maltster tricks the grain into starting the germination process, so it produces these enzymes to break down these long-chain molecules into the food source that the grain needs to grow.
Right.
And then what we do is we nick them all and turn them into beer.
Very good.
So we take the grain, we steep it in water at different temperatures, and you get a hydrolysis reaction. Hydro, water, lysis means sort of lyse to break. So
right.
Hydrolysis reaction is basically using water molecules to split these.
So
what we're using is the water molecule and the enzymes to break up the starch molecule into fermentable sugars.
Yeah.
And then the yeast can attack those fermentable sugars and break them out further, releases energy, keep the yeast alive, but also gives off ethanol as a byproduct and CO2.
Obviously, the brewing process is something that I've always been aware of. When you do brewery tours, they talk you through things. But that nucleus of what it is that's actually happening in the mash tun has always been a bit of a mystery. So it's really interesting to get that.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, I have to say, goes over my head. I've got no science background whatsoever, but I think I get the principle, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially breaking down those sugars, the malt. Is it breaking down the sugars?
Yeah,
breaking down the malt to get the sugars out.
You're breaking down the starch molecules that are inside the malt.
Okay.
To become the smaller chain sugar malt. So Starchy is like a big chain sugar malt.
Yeah, I see.
And we're breaking it down into smaller ones that can be fermented. And then the key to how that is controlled is the temperature of the mash. And that controls the enzyme reaction and which part of the enzyme reaction you favour. Right. The one that chops things up into small bits or the one that chops things up into big bits.
So when you mash at different temperatures, you get varying different sizes. You get the 1, 2, or 3 molecule.
Yeah, that's right. So the temperature affects which 1 of 2 enzymes that the reaction favours. So the sweet spot that we brew in is a range that's a compromise between these two enzymes. One's called the alpha amylase, one's called the beta amylase enzyme. And these enzymes, if you remember from your GCSE chemistry or biology, enzymes, it's all to do with the shape, and it's the shape of an enzyme helps. It's kind of constraining in terms of how its activity, how its behavior works. So the enzymes, these alpha and beta amylase enzymes, they're the ones that help the water molecule to cleave off these molecules, these 1s, 2s, and 3s. The beta amylase, that one attacks the end of the starch molecule. So John Palmer, we're going to put his link in his How to Brew. He gives a really good analogy about this. And you think of the starch molecule as the branches of a tree, right? And you're trying to gobble that up into small bits that the yeast can get to, right? So the beta amylase, that's the one that snips from the ends of the branches. And it can snip in 2s, basically. Yeah. So it can take 2 maltose molecule, 2 glucose molecules. It can snip off in that size. Whereas the alpha amylase, that one attacks randomly around the tree and breaks off bigger chunks, which then the beta can snip up into the smaller bits.
Right.
And then the bits that are left behind, they're your sort of your dextrins, which you can't ferment because they'll be too awkward a shape for the beta to get to, but the alpha's already carved them up. So the temperatures favour one side of the reaction or the other more by changing the temperature of your mash tun.
So if you had, I remember it was somewhere, I can't remember what the temperature was you're supposed to get to, but it's about 70-ish degrees, or have I got that totally out?
No, you're not a million miles out there. That's the top end. So what did you make when you were making a beer?
It was an IPA. It turned out to be a sour. but it was an IPA, and I remember I had to keep it within a certain, maybe within 5 degrees, one way or the other.
Yeah.
Which was a nightmare on a normal kitchen hob, by the way.
This is the key thing in brewing, is the temperature control is what gives you your consistency because of these reactions. And
right.
This is the thing that homebrewers struggle with the most normally, is the temperature side of things. It's the hardest thing to control with the kit you've got. The higher temperature end, so roughly speaking, your alpha and beta amylase sweet spot for both enzymes is between 61 and 71 degrees.
Right.
If you want to favour the darker sort of beers, have like a more of a body.
Yeah.
If you want to favour that kind of feel for to your beer and sugar makeup for your beer, you want to be at the top end. So you want to be towards your 71, 68 to 71. That'd be if you're trying to do a stout, something like that. There you're going to get more of those longer chain sugars, which are a bit harder for the yeast to break down. So you get a bit more sweetness, you get a bit more body. Not all the sugars can be fermented out. The same extent.
And so if, because I got, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought if I, the warmer I boil this at, I'll say boil, I know it's not quite boiling, but the warmer I do this at, the more alcoholic I thought it was going to be. Is that stupid or is that right?
No, it's the wrong way around.
Is it the wrong way around? So if I'd have gone, if it had been slightly on the cooler side, it more likely to be a stronger.
If you go to the 61 range, which is the limit of sort of, You're tending towards that beta amylase, the one that chops things up really fine. The finer you can chop up your sugars, the more they're going to ferment out. So the drier your beer is going to be,
right?
The further it'll ferment normally. Right. So,
and it's about striking that balance, isn't it, between your fermentables and non-fermentables.
Yeah. So most of us go around the 65 to 67 because you're in the sweet spot between both and you get a medium body kind of beer. But when you come to beer styles, you might want a dry beer. So if you wanted to make something like a sour, you might want it to be really dry,
and
really ferment out. You might want to go down the lower end, to be honest.
So what would you, if you were to do a double IPA, where would you look? Does it change, so if you're doing an IPA, a double IPA, a triple IPA even, is the difference just I'm going to put more hops into this? That's not more hops, rather more malt and presumably more hops as well. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, normally. But your mash temperature, wouldn't necessarily have to change.
Would it not? So it'd be almost, it'd be the same process, just different ingredients going into the tun.
You put more starch molecules in there to chop up the sugar, so you get more sugar.
Right.
Well, thank you very much for that. That was really interesting. I've really learned something. So
yeah, thank you.
No
Cheers.
Problem. I just don't know. Won't you help me,
Bob?
Right, supermarket sub. I got this one. Call it the Morrison's on my way home from work. This is St. Austell proper job. Powerfully hopped Cornish IPA. Have you had this one before?
No, I haven't. I've seen it. I've seen it on the shelves. But to be honest, it's in the part of the, you know, I go to Tesco.
Yeah.
It's in the bit I tend not to bother with because they've got quite an extensive American style IPA, if you like, bit, which I would go to.
They've got a craft section.
Yeah.
This falls into the more traditional sections. And actually, you know, in terms of its appearance, it's not overly, it's not designed to be trendy or anything like that. It's so already it's on the back foot.
It is. Although they're both powerful hops, so let's see.
I think the best thing with this is to try it.
Yeah, I think so. Do you know anything about this brewery, anything? Do you know anything about it? Or?
I don't know anything about the brewery. I've had the beer a few times.
You have, right?
There's also a stronger version called Big Job, I think. But
it's 5.5%, so it's not particularly light, really, is it?
No.
Big Job must be what is that?
I think Big Job comes in around. I'm guessing it's 6.7.
Okay.
That seems like quite a specific guess, but
Shirt around that. Thank you very much.
Right. Appearance, straw colour, very clear. I have a little bit of sediment in there.
Really?
Just on the bottom of the bottle. It's obviously bottle conditioned.
There's
aroma. There's a sweetness there.
It's almost ginger.
Like a caramel biscuit.
Mm-hmm.
This is quite a popular cask beer.
Is it?
And I think from that nose, I can tell that it would make a good cask.
Yeah, I'm already pleasantly surprised by the.
I think a lighter colour tends to be a lighter drink.
Yeah, is that the thickness? Because what you're seeing with the cloud, that is genuine.
I don't just necessarily mean the clarity of it.
Yeah.
It's very pale. You know, it's very, it's light straw in colour.
It's malty, isn't it? It's really malty. You get that?
Yeah, but not like I say, it's sweet. It's biscuit sweet.
Malted milk.
Yeah, that sort of smell.
Yeah.
Which I think is great.
Mm.
So should we give it a taste?
Yeah, I like that.
Very smooth,
mm-hmm.
Easy drinking. Does have that sweetness. It does carry through that little bit of biscuit flavour. There's a fresh piney note there, isn't there? But not over powerful. It's just quite a nicely well balanced beer.
It's really easy, isn't it? You can drink that so quickly. It tastes better than it looks, and I don't mean the beer. I think when it's in its bottle, I mean whether it's aimed at a particular market or I don't know, but that is that's nice. Mm-hmm. Really, I like it.
Yep, and I think this is exactly what this segment of the show should be about. It should be about When you go to supermarkets, it's the beers in the aisles that actually these beers are worth a try.
Yeah.
Don't just go to the craft section. Mm-hmm. You know, that bottle there was $1.78.
Was it?
In Morrison's. And for that beer, I think it's a great price.
It is a good price, yeah.
Rather than immediately going to the craft section. There's gems to be had in there.
Well, what this is telling me is if I go to a pub, and there are a lot of them around my area where they have a lot of beers on, but not necessarily the kind of beers that I typically go for. If I ever see something like Proper Job on, I'll go for it. And hopefully doing more of these will see more of the perhaps more mainstream beers that you'd find in a typical, you know, English pub. I want to have a bit of know-how on them so that I know, avoid that one, go with this one.
Classic, no more formal. Yeah,
yeah.
You know, No one's going to rave about that beer.
Well, I think if we take some photos, get on Twitter. You've got to get out there and try it. It's 179 in Morrison's.
But you don't always drink Stella beers. You know, they're not all outrageously hot beasts of beer. Sometimes you want, and a lot of the times you want, a good, easy drinking beer. And I think that's a category that don't get enough attention. And, you know, these beers have been known for years. I think the stuffy image works against them in a lot of respects, but there's quality there.
Yeah, well,
and I think the trick is to find out, the more you drink, you build up a repertoire of beers which fall into that good quality cask category, mm-hmm. and good quality bottled beer category. Beers that seem to stand up to however they've been handled, because that beer, you never know how well they've been handled when you get them from the supermarket, unlike an independent retailer. But for it still to be delivered in that sort of quality is really good.
I need to know a little bit more about that comment there about an independent retailer will handle it better, perhaps, than a supermarket would. When we're talking about the handling of beer, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about how it's transported, where it's kept?
Yes, all of that. The main, there's two biggest differentials in how a bottle can be handled. There is light and there is heat.
Yeah.
Really, a beer should be kept away from sunlight. The idea of a brown bottle was that it blocked out sunlight. It doesn't block out all sunlight. Cans block out all sunlight.
And sunlight kills the hops. Is that what we're saying? Or is it just generally weakens the...
It doesn't kill them. It skunks them.
Skunks them. Oh, I've heard of a skunked beer. I've never had one.
Well, you have.
Have I?
Yes.
Because,
because Corona.
Corona, yeah.
Yeah, so you have Corona, for example, is deliberately skunked. That beer is in a clear glass. What happens is that the sunlight within the range of colours, I think it's something to do with the blue spectrum of sunlight, reacts with hot oils in beers and produces off flavours as a result of it. So the idea is to try and block the sunlight getting to the beer with the hot oils in it. Also, imagine any element of living product going through different temperature changes, and the worst thing for it is the changes. So if you have a beer that is held at one particular temperature throughout its life, it'll remain constant.
Yeah.
Imagine the energy of the living things in there will remain constant throughout its life. Whereas if they are sort of subject to extreme temperatures, heat, then cold, heat, then cold, heat, then cold, they effectively become tired and they change their whole.
And that's detectable. So you could drink a beer that's not being kept well. Mm-hmm. There's been all those changes in heat, it's had a bit of sunlight. And when you taste that beer, what is it you're detecting? Flatness, is it not? And I don't, you know, just kind of generally all of the flavours have kind of...
Yes, you'll detect freshness.
Yeah.
You'll detect life and energy. Just in the flavours will either jump out or they'll rip out, you know.
Yeah,
it's that sort of difference.
I know we've been drinking before. Mm-hmm. I remember a few months ago, you and I, we were in a pub and you had, it was Jakehead. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, that is a really fresh pint. I thought, how do you know that? I honestly tasted it and I thought, I can't tell. I'm sure it was nice.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Jakehead's actually a classic example of a beer that I think I noticed the freshness all the more. It's probably because I had a lot of Jakehead. You know, it's a big beer in this area, and it's probably for many years been the main IPA in the local beer scene. And because of that, I probably noticed differences all the more.
Yeah.
But it's that hop flavour. Jakehead's a big, powerful beer. There's an awful lot of malts go in it, and it, as IPAs go, it is quite balanced. There's an awful lot to it. That it's not simply just a powerfully hopped beer. There's a really strong malt backbone to it, and because of that, it suffers when the hops are, or if it's mishandled or whatever.
Yeah.
it suffers when those hops die. Quite, you know, it becomes noticeably malty.
Right.
But you know, that's the beer is designed to have that strong malt backbone to back up the strong hops that are. That
the
are
balance
in.
Is the balance is there, and if there's anything that dips, if the, yeah. the hops dip away in any way,
yeah.
then you're left with
yeah.
Because an unbalanced beer.
The thing with balance, when I talk about hops die away, the hops bring two things to the party. They bring bitterness and they bring aroma. So you have malt is your sweetness.
Yeah.
And during the boil, you'll have hops go into the boil early on, which imparts bitterness. And the sole function of them is to counteract that sweetness. Now, those bittering hops don't die away very quickly and generally will stay there, which is why a beer still tastes balanced 12 months on.
Yeah.
The hops that go in later in the boil, some actually go like right at the end or even in the fermenter, is a dry hop. When you hear the term dry hop, that's what that is. And there, you don't get any bitterness from them.
That's just pure aroma.
It's aroma. There is flavour there as well. But mainly their aroma to chuck out the juiciest, the hop flavours, the hop essence. So yeah, it's that latter element which fades.
Yeah.
Because you imagine aroma's energy, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's like you're thinking molecules running out of energy over time, it settles down and fades away.
So it's always a disappointment for me. I've opened a few cans that, I mean, not necessarily cans that I think, this would be great, but it's an IPA or it's something I want to drink. Open the can and I always pop my nose just over the can. You get those ones where there's not much going on.
Immediately it's on the back.
Yes, right. Yeah, so, I mean, actually, this had a fair bit on the nose. I felt this is better than...
Given what I've just said, it's a credit to that, that BS. It's a lovely beer. It's a really nice, easy, good all-round beer.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how it's handled. Doesn't matter how it seems to be kept. Generally, this beer stands up to it. I mean, obviously, if it was put through the extremes, it would probably be awful. But that said, this is a best before April 2018.
So does that suggest to you?
Well, I rule of thumb, I generally go off a 12-month window. It's not strictly always 12 months. A lot of breweries have a shorter spell than that. I think Cloudwater have something like 3 months for some of the beers. But if that's just a month old, maybe it's still pretty
strong. I wondered, I was going to ask you, when do you think... So I've got some beers in my fridge that may have been there for probably longer. The crap beers. Beers I'm not bothered about drinking.
Yeah.
And I'll probably have a barbecue at some point and some unsuspecting guests.
Have you tried?
Have a beer. But, you know, those beers, I assumed that would be in a similar league in terms of, you know, it doesn't really matter when you drink the thing. It'll probably be fine. I suspect those beers I've got in the fridge, they're going to taste not dissimilar to what they would have tasted before, you know, when they were fresh.
Some of those beers might surprise you. I think this, not knowing this beer, this is a Britain's Got Talent beer. Isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You weren't expecting anything.
No, I wasn't. That.
But actually, you're pleasantly surprised.
Susan Boyle in a glass. Well, that's... We'll take that on board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've just told you, I've got a fridge full of old beer.
Yep.
Are you ready to try one of my old beers then at some point?
How many have you got?
I've got, seriously, probably 30. This is, we've spoken about this before, you know, Rob quite likes beer.
Yep.
I know that you've had something similar. Oh, you know, we'll get Rob some. And it's lovely. People have thought, I'll get Rob some beers. Mm-hmm. beers. And then you get me some beers that, to be honest, I'm not that bothered about, you know. So they go in the fridge thinking, I will have them at some point. But then every week I go to the shop or I'll go somewhere, I'll get some nice beers in. And so I've already got, like, I've,
I've got my list, I've got my backlog, and they just keep making their way to the back of the queue. And obviously, they're getting less fresh all the time, so they're less appealing. So I have a load of them. So let's have some old beer at some point.
You know what? What probably is worthwhile doing. I had a big clear out a couple of years ago, and I had beers that I've been. Well, I used to have in where I used to live. I had a set of shelves sort of around the bottom of what was effectively my kitchen workbench. And on one side of these shelves, I just had a whole range of different beers. Mm. That was my display.
Yeah.
And obviously, they still had beer in them. So I'd had this in storage for a while. But anyway, after a while, I was like, I've got to get rid of these things. I should try some of these.
Yeah.
So literally, I stood next to the sink one day and just tried them all. I was like, that's no good. Oh, actually, that one's not fun. You know, and like some of them do stand the test.
Really? Well, that might be a thing to try to see
just,
how.
Just a taste.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've got a load of them. So we should do it though. We should try them because I'd be interested. I think it's interesting to know because these things will be past their sell by their best before date and all that. They'll surpass that year. In fact, I think some of them I got from somebody who had already said, "Oh, I think these might be out of date. You might want them." You know, and I said, "Oh, go on then." And so they were at a year or beyond a year when I got them. So they're now heading into year two. We should give them a go.
Now, if they were all bottles of big Imperial Stout,
that would be good.
They'd be fantastic.
You've told me to.
I bet they're not, though.
No, they're not. They're pale ales.
Getting paler by the day.
Yeah. You've told me with the, because I've got a couple of stouts, you said I need to mature. Like, I've got that one that a chap at work gave me, the Durham Brewery. Is it Russian something or other?
Russian Imperial Stout.
Is that a type?
That's Russian, a style, yeah. Russian Imperial Stout. They are classic, big, strong, powerful beers.
Yeah.
I love
them. And so what's keeping it doing? If they sold it, if they put it out to market when they did, my usual view, although this probably goes against, you know, anything other people think about wines and things like that, my view would be, oh, okay, that's they're saying this is the product we've got. Then why did they not release it 2 years down the line? Or is that just a storage matter? I don't know.
There probably is a bit of a storage matter. But actually, some people do like them fresh.
Yeah.
You know, like we're going back to talking about the hops and things, you know. Hops in a Russian Imperial Stout aren't particularly important for the aroma element, but some people do like the fresh. What you get is, I always imagine it like, imagine pebbles on a beach,
yeah,
where they sit in the same place for days on end and get gently rounded off by the waves.
Yeah.
That's what's happening in the Russian Imperial Stout.
You've painted a picture.
But you do, they develop more of a rounded flavour. Yeah. All the harshness goes. And they just kind of merge together as one, the flavours.
Right. So I mean, I told you that this, I forget what I don't know if it had an expiry date on it or something. You looked at something on that beer and said, leave that until next year, I think you said.
Yeah.
That's going to be lovely then.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to do that, but I'm curious, what's your rule of thumb then? How have you come to...
Well, generally, I won't drink an Imperial Stout within the first year.
Right.
And even then, my mindset is that the longer, the better.
Right. Okay.
Like, I have some Imperial Stouts that I've had for 5 years. And, you know, they're just there. They're just getting better. And
5 years.
Yes.
Bloody hell.
I do, you know, I have a bit of a collection.
And so you have found through experience that the longer you leave these things, the better they are. Is there a point of diminishing returns?
Oh, well,
is there a point where it becomes...
There probably is. I don't know. Undoubtedly, there is a lifetime for everything, isn't there?
Yeah.
I
didn't know if these things were just like. In fact, I think I saw something. Was it some, you know, BBC? You know, the things you'll, you know, fun stories for you.
Yeah.
And I think somebody had opened a beer from, like, wartime or something, and it was drinkable. And it was like, oh, this happened. I'm assuming that's a stout. That's a, you know, I don't know. I'm guessing.
It doesn't have to be. You know, if you go back the adage of it's the hop, it's the lively hops which fade. Beers back then weren't particularly hop forward, so you know, why should it change over time too? They don't. Nothing deteriorates.
Yeah, they put hops in these things though. So like a stout that has hops in it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
To balance the sweetness. They're very. I think. Do you not think that? Am I wrong in thinking that a stout has? I think they're really sweet. I think there's something in there that's like it's rich. And
I think there's two camps here for me. You've got what I think of as the American stouts, American style stouts. Things like Yellow Belly. Have you had Yellow Belly, Buxton?
No, I've seen that. That's the thing with yep. the. But it looks like a Buxton
camp. Yeah, yeah. Which is what the whole. Name is around, but anyway.
Right.
and beers like that, Alesmith, do a Speedway Stout, which I find those stouts are really quite sweet.
Yeah.
But there's also the sort of aside from that, for me, Almasty's stouts are much more roast driven, so that there's an earthiness to them, there's a bitterness to them, and they're not quite so sweet.
Right.
You know, the things like we did a bourbon barrel aged stout, and the sweetness came from the bourbon that was in it, yeah. You know, and that roasted edge bonds that really well instead of just being adding sweetness to an already sweet stout for me. And I like that earthy.
You are going to have to. I remember you, that was you reviewed that. I remember listening to that on the plane on the way back from America.
Beer collection.
Yeah, you're going to have to point me in the direction of a top quality stout to buy
right.
for a while. So leave that with you. You tell me. So I'd like to try, Almasty stouts. Because I think I'm naturally inclined to go for IPAs and paler, you know, mm-hmm. fresher hopped, I suppose, beers. But it's something I need to turn to, I think. So.
Well, I mean, Almasty have... Well, I've got some of the last batch was the Pinot Noir Imperial Stout, but they've got
Pinot Noir is a white, so is it?
Yes.
They've used wine to make this stout, or is well, it just...
Well, when I say that, they're the barrels that it's been aged in.
Right.
So, really, really interesting. When I did that review on the Beer Clock Show with the bourbon barrel aged Imperial Stout, that was in June of last year. The previous October, I was at Indyman, mm-hmm. and they had fresh brewed that stout, and they had it pouring at Indyman. It hadn't been barrel aged or anything like that, and it was fresh. It was lovely. So to try the same beer, having been aged 9 months in a bourbon barrel. Was fantastic, you know, that getting that contrast.
So this is me being really thick now. So it's aged in a bourbon barrel,
mm-hmm.
i.e. a barrel that has stored bourbon in it in the past.
Yeah.
And the flavour of that bourbon that's been ingrained in the wood gets into the flavour of the beer that you have 9 months down the line.
Exactly.
Is that how it works?
As well as barrels themselves impart a flavour, so you get a... There's like a vanilla note that the wood of the barrel introduces into.
Right. Let's try some of this stuff.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. But he's got, I believe, coming out soon, he's got a coffee imperial stout, which are due to be bottled.
Well, we had the Time Bank, and that was nice.
Yeah.
What was the
Mocha Milk Stout.
The Mocha Milk Stout. And I tried that one before when we were at Craft Beer Calling.
The espresso.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was Beavertown, I think.
Yeah.
Really nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll try that.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I'll be getting some bottles.
I've beaten you on this one, Miles.
I know.
Because you're still on the proper job.
Because you're getting me to do all the talking.
That's good. I think he it's nice to know. It's nice to think that you can. I think that this has made me feel like next time I go to the supermarket, I might head away from the craft beer aisle.
Well, this is in Morrison's. I don't know what the deal is. Actually, is it four for £6? Something like that. Anyway. And this is in that that set, you know. Whereas the craft beers aren't, are they?
No. And that's 500ml as well, isn't it? So
yeah, and it's all of a sudden you think, oh, you know, there are some decent beers in that range.
Yeah. Did you know this was going to be before we've had this? Did you know this has got something, or is it? What I'm saying is, are you lulling me in here, Miles? Are you making me go to Morrison's and go, oh, I'm going to go for these beers in this aisle? And then find myself not enjoying those beers. Did you know this was a good one?
This wasn't a total guess. I have had this before. You've had it before. Several times. I've often turned to this at times where I haven't been able to get a decent beer. And I've been like, oh, yes, proper job.
Yeah.
I know I'm safe there. But it's through knowing that. And I used to get these beers before the likes of Coppers were there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is where I used to go for decent beer.
Right. Well, noted. That'll be on my list now in case, yeah.
I think it's a top supermarket sub.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. Great to be able to introduce Dr. Hop to you. You can follow us on Twitter at Sippin' Forecast or on Facebook, Northeast Sippin' Forecast. But until next time, good night. I just don't know.